Kirk have test particular. For nine at top.
What stage is this?
1998.
Okay. This is all part of Christiahu's review of all that had happened.
I sent him already the first two records.
Okay. Okay, ready? So we're talking about Chizkiyahu, whose father Ochaz was a terrible, miserable king who cleared out the Beis Hamikdash from its furnishings to Hashem and brought in copies of Aramaic temples and almost brought Israel to a polytheistic state. And his son, Chizkiyahu, had to clean that up. Okay? So, this is a description of the review of what brought us to this day. When someone wants to do tshuva, he has to review what went wrong for which I have to do tshuva. Right? Okay, serve the pasuk out. Bonai ato al tishalu ki bochem bochar Hashem la'amod l'panav l'shor sov l'yoslo m'shor simu maktirin. He's trying to say, don't give up hope of renewing what was lost here. Right? Do you remember? I think at we ended up the last class by talking about Daniel's prediction that a certain amount of years after God's altar was made into a despicable, disgusting thing, Shikut Shomein, that after a certain amount of years from that time, that the redemption would come. Now, it's very cryptic what he's talking about. You can't know when a period ends unless you know when it begins, right? So he says to wait 1,290 years and 1,305 years. From when? Right? So he says, from the time that the Mizbeach is a Shikut Shomein. Maze. So some say Hanukkah, some say from Atalia, because Atalia also destroyed the altar, Bais Rishon, Bais Sheni, and Ochaz. So these are the five times. The Malbim says if you count these years from these five dates, right? So he said if you go with Bais Sheni and Bais Rishon and Hanukkah, it's too far ahead. If you go with Atalia, it's too far, it's past. So he said, if you go with Ochaz, if you count the years that Daniel mentions from Ochaz, it gets you to 1915. It was 1868 when he wrote that. It gets you to 1915. So he thought, this is it. And he used other information based on Gemaras and Pesukim and Yechezkel and other places, that it would involve a world war with Germany at the center of it. And so he wrote that Germany would be, so Germany was already becoming warlike at the time. And he said that because Gog Magog is Ashkenaz. Look in Bereshit, Gog Magog. Gog is Ashkenaz's brother, and Ashkenaz is Germany. So he thought that in the Gematria of Gog Magog was 70. So he thought it would be a world war, you know, the Ayinu Mosa Olam. It would be a war involving all the nations of the world. If not all the nations are fighting, all the nations would have an interest in the war. Right? So, as such, he predicted that there will be a world war in 1915. The difference is that Jews weren't central to that war. Now, insofar as World War II was like sort of a World War I
continuation. Everybody considers it a continuation.
So then the Malbim was read all this correctly, but the point is that when Daniel said Shikut Shomem, he was talking about Ochaz. Okay? I would like to disagree with that Cheshbon for the following reason. One, 1915 came and went, unless you want to say, and I think the Malbim may be correct about this, that World War I was Milchemes Gog u'Magog, together with World War II, right? And that the Gemara Sanhedrin says that the aftermath of this war, which the Christians call Armageddon, the aftermath of this war may last hundreds of years before the actual redemption comes. Right? I prefer to say this because the description of the destruction that will come to the Jews as a result of this war, both in Yechezkel as well as in Zechariah, I'd rather say is in the past. Right?
Than in the future.
Right. You know what I'm saying? I'd rather say that it's a... You don't have to be afraid of Gog and Magog. It happened already. Maybe there's some little bits of aftermath, but it's the worst of it has been behind us. Right? So, fine. But here is my problem. My problem is that I don't know why Daniel, if he wants to start a starting point for when the redemption should be counted, should start from 200 years ago. Give different dates starting from something closer. And if the definition is Shikut Shomeim, right, when the temple is in a destroyed, disgusting state, right, wouldn't it be smarter to use, if it's true that there were five times in our history where that our altar was a Shikutz, Atalia, Ochoz, Churban Bayis Rishon by the Babylonians, before the Chanukah story, and Churban Bayis Sheni. There was no altar to speak of after that, right? You might refer back to Shiloh, what the Philistines did in Shiloh, but that wasn't the Beis HaMikdash, fine. So these five dates. Of these five dates, which one is closest to Daniel? Atalia, Achaz, Churban Bayis Rishon, Chanukah, Churban Bayis Sheni. Which one is closest to Daniel?
Churban
Bayis Rishon.
Yeah.
Right? So the first temple, the first destruction, is right near him. He's right around that time. He was exiled to Bavel 11 years before the Churban. So who knows when he's writing that? It could be right around the Churban, right? Why does he call the Churban Shikut Shomeim? Right? That's something to do with the altar. If you count the years that he mentions, I know why the Malbim did Achaz. Because Achaz's years started much earlier and got him shortly after his own time. You're not going to write in your book, oh, I figured out when Mashiach is coming. It's 275 years from now. Right? I want it to be sooner. Right? Okay, so as a result, it could be, I would give an excuse for the Malbim to say it's talking about Achaz, is because everything about that Cheshbon that Daniel is talking about is meant to be cryptic. So if he wants to be cryptic, of course he's going to use a cryptic starting point. Right? As opposed to something more predictable. Churban Beis HaMikdash plus these years. Right?
The
problem is...
With Churban Beis HaMikdash.
So if you use Churban Beis HaMikdash, then you're but here's the thing. Then you would be like now, you're 21 something. But here's the thing. Are you familiar with this? Remember Mindy wrote a paper on this, and Ellie wrote a paper on this. About the 164 missing years in Bayis Sheni. Are you familiar with this? There's a lot of history missing somewhere in the Persian times. So if you incorporate those years... Right, where 5776 corresponding to 2016 only without those 164 missing years, but if you incorporate those 164 missing years, we're 5776 plus 164, which would put us from Churban Beis HaMikdash right in the sweet spot. We'd be about 15-20 years away right now. Then,
So we're at the edge of that.
Right, we're 5776 plus 164, which puts us a lot closer to that time period. All right, I'm just putting it out there.
Anyway, whenever it comes, we'll accept it and go there.
It's Hashem. In good time. Okay, so he's talking about my sons. It's time to come back and to serve God once again. Machas ben Amosai. That's a name. Machas ben Amosai, Yoel ben Azariahu, min b'nei HaKohasi, tracing their lineage all the way back to Kehos. Umin b'nei Merari, Kish ben Avdi, v'Azariahu ben Yehalalel. Umin Agershuni, Yoach ben Zima, v'Eden ben Yoach. Look, the Levite families traced their lineages straight, one to, you know, all three families. ומי בני אלי צפון שימרי ויאל מי בני אוסף זכריהו מתניהו אלי צפון בן עוזיאל, right, remember him? Mm-hmm. Uziel was one of the four sons of Kehos. Kehos had four sons, Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, and Uziel. Okay? That's why Korach rebelled, because he said, it's one thing that Amram, the oldest, gets his two sons to be the best, the top, the highest ranks. But why are you giving the head of the Kehas tribe, why are you making it Elitzaphan? You know, Uziel ben Elitzaphan ben Uziel. Why are you making him? I'm from Yitzhar. Yitzhar is the second son. Why are you skipping over to the fourth?
Sometimes you need to.
Yeah, but you see, Elitzaphan is mentioned here. Right? Yitzhar is not. Right. So Elitzaphan Asaf is actually from Bnei Korach. Bnei Haman, Yechiel, Vishimi, Bnei Yedusun, Shmaya, Uziel. These are all names mentioned in Tehillim. These are all the Leviim names that were famous way back. These are the descendants of those people. So all these Levim got together. He drafted a lot of people to come in and to purify the house. Okay. The Kohanim went all the way inside. That means into the Heichal. That's what we call the Beis HaMikdash. Lefnima Beis Hashem. L'taher. In order to... Only Kohanim can walk in there. Okay. Non-Kohanim may not walk in there. Alright. L'chatzar beis Hashem. They found tuma. What kind of tuma do you think?
It's like the yeshiva of my grandfather was filled with Arab donkey leavings.
Right.
When we went to see it in 1968. That's tumah.
Right, okay, but
that's exactly what it looked like.
But then they fixed it up.
Yeah, it's cleaned out. There's a guy sitting there learning. Yeah. At that time, it looked pretty bad.
Yeah.
Idols.
Yeah, so that's probably also. They probably bought an idol.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So that's what they did.
You.
Okay. So, v'kablu halavim lahutzi l'nachal Kidron chutza. Nachal Kidron is that little stream under the Harabais where they put all of the extra libations or extra blood that's in there. Okay, and they threw it all down there and they scrubbed it and they ground it to dust and they brought it to Nachal Kidron. The beginning of the first month, they started the Kadesh. This sounds like a Torah, right? The first of Nisan, they started celebrating, and by Yibayom Hashmini, right? Vayom Shmona Lachodesh, Ba'ul Ulam Hashem, Ba'ikachu, Esbeis Hashem, Liyamim Shmona. Vayom Shishas Lachodesh, Harishon, Kilu. You have a real big problem here, don't you?
Yes, too short.
No. Where's Pesach in here? Mm-hmm. Right? So the last day of the celebrations of this was like the first day of the Omer. But it doesn't even mention Pesach. Right? V'yavo pnima el Chizkiyahu ha-melech v'yamru tiharnu es kol be'is Hashem v'es mizbach ha'olav es kol keilav v'es shulchan ha-mareches v'es kol keilav. Right? So they describe some of the workings that they did. Now I hope that we have some kind of reference to Pesach coming up here. How could they do such a thing? How could you mention 8 days of Nisan and then another 8 days without them mentioning Pesach? Right? Okay. So they said we took care of the whole house. We cleared out the altar. We cleared out the vessels. We cleared out the shulchan where the bread goes. We cleared out the mareches. Where the wood is piled up. They call a kelim asher his niach hamelach ochos. All the vessels that he his niach. Yeah, abandoned. B'malchuso b'malo in his treachery, hechanu v'hikdashnu v'hinam lifnei mizbach Hashem. Hechanu is from Lashon Kain. We've established that. We've given them their foundation. We made it holy. We numbed with Nimizbach Hashem. We placed them all right in front of the Mizbeach. He got up in the morning. So now this should be the 17th, right? And they gathered all of the officers and they went up to the house of God. Shiva, Shiva, Shiva. Utsfirayizim Shiva Lachatos al Mamlachovala Val Mikdosh Val Yehuda Vayamalibne Aaron Akodin Malos al Mibach Hashem. And they brought 7 cows, 7 rams, 7 sheep, 7 types of birds, 7 goats, all 7 for Lachatos. Notice Izim Lachatos, because the goat is always the sin offering.
Mm-hmm.
Why more than any other animal? So the Rambam says to atone for the sale of Yosef, because they slaughtered the goat, drip its coat in the blood. For that one sin.
Is this the air of goat?
Yeah.
So it's like the same as Azazel.
Oh, could be for that too, yeah. That's why that's a goat. Also to atone for Yaakov, who deceived his father with goats. Okay. So all right, so they brought all these animals to bring up on God's Mizbeach. V'yishchatu ha-bakar v'yikablu ha-kohanim es adam v'yizruku al Mizbeach. The Kohanim received the blood and they sprinkled it on the altar. V'yishchatu ha-ilim v'yizruku adam ha-mizbeach. V'yishchatu ha-kvasim v'yizruku adam ha-mizbeach. Okay, thank you for telling me this. And they slaughtered all these animals and they sprinkled the blood on the Mizbeach. V'yigishu ha-sirei ha-chatos lifnei ha-melech v'ha-kohol v'yismachu yideyem aleihem. You know, before you slaughter a sin offering, you have to press down on its head as if they're pushing the sins into the animal. It's symbolic, you know. It's an admission that really I should be killed mm-hmm. for this sin. But God, in his infinite mercy, has allowed me to. Okay. V'yishchatum ha-kohanim v'yichatu estamam ha-mizbeicha l'chaper al kol Yisrael. And all of this was to atone for all of the sins, not just of the Kohanim, but all of Israel. It's like a little Yom Kippur going on here. It's a strange kind of pasuk to have. This is typical of Divrei Yamim. It says that David made the Levim stand. You see the place where they stand right up to Shar Nicanor, those 15 mm-hmm. steps. They sing the Shir Malos on them, right? Mm-hmm. Kohanim are behind them with trumpets, right? And they have cymbals and harps and various stringed instruments. Just as David set up, Mitzvah David, by the command of David to do it this way. Not only David, also God and Nosson. God Chose HaMelech. Does it work? Why couldn't they just say God HaChoze? God Choze HaMelech. The Melech needs a Choze? Of course he does. When he goes to battle, he asks his Choze, tell me, what's going to happen here? Should I go this way? Should I go that way? It's like the Urim V'Tumim. Okay. Ki b'yad Hashem ha-mitzvah b'yad nevi'av. It was in the hands of God to bring back all this singing. It's an integral part of the Beis Hamikdash work is to be singing. V'chol ha'kol mishtachavim v'hashir mishorer v'chatzotus mechatzitzrim ha'kol ad lichlosa olah. And the entire kihila were bowing, singing, and blowing trumpets. Ha'kol ad lichlosa olah. All of this until they finished offering the kabbalas. And the Gemara indeed says, when kabbalas are being offered, there has to be singing going on. There's libations, there's wine being poured, and there's a lot of simcha going on. Add to that, you know, Rabbi Arya Kaplan says that the Ketores was actually Kenei Bosem. Remember we mentioned this once. I don't want to, you know, put into a whole disarray the incense business. But he says Kenei Bosem was cannabis. Kenei Bosem. Cannabisim. So that's what kept the Kohanim happy all day. So, alright, so he says that they were all bowing and singing and dancing and blowing trumpets. Okay, chalos halalos, and when they finished the ola, karo melech v'cholim tzimi tov ishtachadu. They bowed down, they knelt on their knees, and they lowered themselves to bow on the floor. Wow, you ever hear this? He said, now it's time to start singing and giving praise from the words of David and Asaph. Asaph HaChoze.
Some of the Tehillim
aspects.
Yeah.
Now, did you know that he was also a Choze? Like the Choze Milublin, right? He was a Choze. He had to,
he was a
seer. So by Halalu ad l'simcha v'yikdu v'yishtachalu. So it's because of this that there's a Gemara Bava Basra that says that David was helped in writing Tehillim by other people, and Asaph was one of them. Haman was one of them. Some of the people we just mentioned earlier, other people that helped David write Tehillim. Vayani Chizkiyahu vayomer, atah milesem yedchem l'Hashem, goshu v'haviu zvachim v'todos l'beis Hashem, v'yaviu akol zvachim v'todos v'chon divnei v'alos. And Chizkiyahu said, you know, you've filled your hands, you've made your commitments, now come in and bring in sacrifices and thanksgiving offerings to the house of God. Right? And the people brought in their offerings and their thanksgiving. It's interesting that this is like a renewal, because the Gemara in Shavuos says that whenever Yerushalayim is renewed, or you want to enhance its borders to have more Yerushalayim, you always have to bring Korban Todah. It's always an integral part of the observance of any kind of renewal. It's Korban Torah. Thanks for bringing me this day. Like a Shechian kind of thing. Right? Also, it comes with bread, so that, you know, it gets people, you can have a sandwich. Just bring mustard. You have the bread, you have the meat.
Okay.
Vahimispar. V'himispar ha'olah asher hiviyu ha'kahol bakor shivim elim me'ak v'sim masayim la'olah l'ashem kol ela. And they had hundreds of animals. Well, everyone was well fed that day. V'akodoshim bakor shesh me'os v'tzon shloshes alafim. Whoa! 600 cows and 3,000
sheep.
3,000, wow.
Goodness.
It smelled good that day. Rak ha-kohanim hayu limot, v'lo yachlu lahavshit es kol ha'olos. There weren't enough kohanim to prepare all these animals. They had to be flayed, they had to be skinned. V'chazkum acheihem ha-leviyim ad kelos ha-melacha v'ad yizkadshu ha-kohanim, ki ha-leviyim yishrei levav yizkadesh me'ha-kohanim. The kohanim were too few, and they weren't able to skin the olos. And they tried to strengthen their brothers, the Levites, until all the work was finished, because the Levites, ki alavim yishrei levav lihiskadesh me'akohanim. Now this is a significant pasuk. What does it mean? V'as alavim yishrei levav lihiskadesh me'akohanim. Right? So, you know, the point is that a Levi is only considered holy if he has a Kohen to serve. Right? A Levi is only considered holy if he has a Kohen to serve. You know, when there's no Kohen in Shul, you don't give an Aliyah to a Levi. Right? I mean, you technically can, but a Levi is only called after a Kohen.
Right.
When there's no Kohen in Shul, you don't have to call a Levi, even if there are Levi.
You can call
Yisrael. Yeah. Right? You certainly shouldn't call Yisrael Levi Yisrael. You're not allowed to do that. Because then Yisrael shouldn't get in the Levi before a Levi. You can call Levi if you become Kohen, but that wouldn't be fair. The Leviim are getting so many Aliyahs as it is. I should give them an Aliyah when I can give three Yisraels an Aliyah.
Mm-hmm. Right? So if
there's
no Kohen, you give
Yisrael a present.
Aliyah, then it's
all Yisrael? Yeah, more
Yisrael. In the shul, in the Yisrael was only one Kohen.
He never served us.
Then he brought along his grandson, so that would make two.
Okay. So here's the thing. The question is, I've always had this simple observation. I just feel that there are always more Kohanim than Levi.
careful about their lineage.
Right. That's probably the final answer. Yes.
They have more restrictions, so they're more careful about passing it down.
Right. But it was also another thing. If a Kohen marries a divorcee, his children are not Kohanim. Uh-huh. If a Levi marries a divorcee, his children are Levim. Right. But here is the thing. At the time of the close of at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, there were 22,300 Levim and 3 Kohanim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there were 5, but 2 of them died. 22,300 Levim and 3 Kohanim. So why already, by the time of Ezra, does it say there were so many more Kohanim than Levim?
Well, the exiles, they intermarried.
Right. The Kohanim survived the exile much better intact in terms of their lineage, because they were very careful to guard themselves.
And they come back.
Right? As opposed to the Levim, who were not so much. Which is why the Talmud says that Ezra made this a fine against the Levim. He said, from now on, the Maaser Rishon that usually given to the Levi, maybe you give it to the Kohen. Kohen's also a Levi. Right? Technically not. In fact, you know that if a Kohen does guard duty at the gate, he's also Chayav Misa? Because the lady has two jobs, the guarding the gates and singing. And doing general, you know, washing the hands of the Kohanim, doing general... Right. So if a Kohen does Levi work, he's also Chayav Misa. If a Levi does Kohen work, certainly. Or Yisrael does Kohen work. Yeah. If you go up and then sprinkle the blood, you walk into the Heichal.
Kohanim don't go up to Eretz Yisrael as much as they all stay here. So you have whole shuls full of Kohanim, and in Eretz Yisrael you have a shortage.
Really?
Yeah.
My son-in-law is a Kohen, but on Shabbos he was only one of two people to Duchen.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Interesting. There's a whole big shul of people who took Kohanim.
But that's exactly what I found. And I was in several shuls, and always it was only one or two.
Yeah.
And then they're missing.
One here will be Dochen, you see.
You have to.
But it might be different. You have to see what's the per capita, how many Kohanim per other people in the shul. But
no, the shul was equally big.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The shul was equally big to this one.
Mm-hmm. Really, you have a question?
Yeah. I don't know. Did the reality change that nowadays that there are less Kohanim and more Levim? Because I see many Kohanim who are single, older, and can't get married. So then that would leave...
That's an interesting, very interesting. I wonder if there's anyone can make a study on that. Because in previous years, when I was getting married at 13, 15, 17, 18, all right, a Kohen, you know. But now, with the single situation, a Kohen is so strictly curtailed for a number of reasons. One, the divorce rate is higher than it's ever been. Two, things that women do to make themselves possible to Kohanim, they're doing much more now than they ever did before. So I have to explain. Right? So there are a lot more, the Kohanim have
very little choice.
Especially after a certain age. You know, I'm not saying through any fault of, necessarily the women involved. Divorce happens and you know, things like that. But that may also curtail the numbers of Kohanim.
It's only in Eretz Yisrael, apparently, not here. Because the shul in Yonkers is mostly Kohanim. And a couple of people standing in the audience left.
Okay, I think that's not so related, but... Mm-hmm. When you give somebody an aliyah, the person has to be shomer mitzvos.
Yeah.
But Moshe Paskins that it's he has to be able to read the Hebrew, the Ramah says. But then the Ramah writes that the person giving the aliyah really should be laning, right? But he's not prepared, so the Balkori lanes for him. But he said, then he writes, but today we have to give aliyahs to people who can't read long, even though the Shulchan Aruch says it's karov lebracha lehatzala. Why? Because those are the people who are supporting the shuls. If we didn't give them aliyahs, we couldn't build shuls.
So then even let's say a Kohen who's not shomer mitzvos, he still gets the honor of having the first aliyah.
You don't have to bestow it upon him, but yes, that's the minute now. The Rambam writes in Perish HaMishnah, in the Seches Gittin, Daf Samach, where this mitzvah appears. He says, I don't know where this crazy minhag came that we automatically give a Kohen the first aliyah. You should darkish shalom. Where did the crazy amina come from? You should give the biggest Talmud Chacham in the room the first aliyah always. And he blames it on these awful, he calls it wrong-headed Ashkenazic customs that you give the Kohen always the first aliyah.
The Rambam was fat.
Rambam, Perish HaMishnah. Perish HaMishnah to Mesechus Gittin, that's
the Rambam was fat.
Yeah, you are very zealous about the correct customs of the Sephardim and the incorrect customs of the
Ashkenazim.
Quickly, he says because the custom of giving out aliyahs this way was originally meant to prevent arguments. I'm smarter than you. No, I'm smarter than you. He goes, okay, listen, we're just going to give it to the Kohen and that's it.
The Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, I think it was.
I don't think we can find a consensus of who's the smartest person in the room.
No, you could not.
Absolutely.
It's a much easier thing to determine.
No, this makes it much easier. There's less fighting.
Yeah, I think if we were trying to do it to the smartest person in the room, there'd be a lot of infighting.
At least who's considered the Kohen is...
And they would leave the shul, right? He didn't take me.
Yeah.
Was it Rabbi Feinstein who says that once if the person is not Shomer Mitzvah, Shomer Shabbat, and when they set foot in shul, it's considered as if they did tshuva?
Yeah, today I think like giving someone like that an aliyah is like in terms of Kira, maybe it'll ignite something in his soul where he remembers his grandfather or someone being up at the Torah in a positive way, and it can bring you back.
That's what we ran into on the Queen Elizabeth. We made a minyan, and my sons leaned and davened, right? And all the people who came to the minyan hadn't been there since they were bar mitzvah.
Oh,
and
wow.
They were so honored to be called up.
You never know. Pintela does and does for their own children, maybe.
What? It was very interesting. It was a very interesting experience. Mm-hmm. My father said, we are not the judge of who is from and who is not. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's job. That's the end of that.
So he says that he's talking about who. Here it is. Yudake Shalom to give the first aliyah. Mr. Kohen. So he writes here. He writes the dash is a devar hamafursam b'chol hamakomor shiya kohen korei beveis haknesses rishon bein shiya tamid chacham o am haaretz hinei hu devar she'ein lo shorish b'torah klal. There's no source for giving the kohen always the first aliyah. No miskayz ebeshatz. V'lo hi zos hakihuna hakavanah nirmezes eleha v'zos halacha. That's not the point of our Gemara here, where the Gemara in Gittin talks about how Aliyah should go. V'anini flaha flavor fella me'orei ha'golus sh'nogin v'zeh menog. And I'm just amazed at the places where this, it's almost universal now, even in Sephardic shuls, even in Yemen. Achar ha'yosam b'ri'im me'chola'ei ha'min ha'gos u'me'deos ha'achronim v'darcheihem ve'in etzlam ela inyonim ne'osim l'loshin ha'shas. He says, these are lousy minhagim. I don't know where this loss came upon us. I don't know. I know maybe this is a cleaned up version of it. But I remember seeing that this complaint came as a result of the Ashkenazic influence. Calls it a sickly custom.
But because it is the minhag, that's what everyone must do?
Yeah, so that we do, yeah. If there's Kohen in the room, and let's say two brothers have yahrzeit, two Yisrael brothers, you can never call up two Levim, one after the other, but you can call up two, usually if it's two, it's three also, you can call up three Yisraelim. So you ask the Kohanim to leave the room. You say, Ein Kan Kohen. I never like doing that. I don't like doing that. If there's a Kohen in the room, I like to call the Kohen.
What about white? I mean, I think I can understand why the third Aliyah is considered important, because it's after the Kohen and Levi, and whoever gets that one is like maybe special. But why the sixth one? Why is the sixth Aliyah considered like, you know?
Yeah, I think it's like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. I don't know. Third, you know, I don't know. But I do know that if some people get Revi instead of Shishi, they'll get upset.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of.
I'm upset. I'm not
but
that you have anyway.
If there's Revi or Hamishi, they'll say, what are you? How could you be so stupid?
Also, like
someone like
as
important as me,
always.
Hamishi.
When they say I'm important as me, they're
so,
not important.
Full of hot air, like that they think so
oh, yeah,
much of themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
No. Somebody said
just important touch their skin with a pin, and they will go flying all the way up in the room up to the women's section.
They're not thinking there were so many people sitting down not getting an aliyah at all. And you were singled out.
Week after week, they always have to get the same. It's reserved for them every week. Why? Because other people there
yeah,
also.
It's silly. Shvi should be the most important aliyah. I'll tell you why. Right, because originally in the Gemara, only the first got the aliyah, and the last got the first got the first bracha. Shabbat ban mikolam and sanu shtar sabra hashem zan torah, and only the last one said hashem sanu torah simesuchem. That's it. No, in the middle we just actually read the Torah and nothing else.
No bracha.
No bracha. So only the seventh had a bracha. So the seventh is very important. Anyway, I'm telling you all this because in Divrei Yamim, in the next few chapters, we're going to get hints of how the Levim and Kohanim returned to get the Beis Hamikdash started again, and their numbers, because the numbers are well waist tilted towards the Kohanim, even though at the Torah 22,300 to 3. Come on, what happened? Something cataclysmic happened there.
Oh, they just had lots of babies.
Okay. Okay. V'gam alo l'rov b'chelvei Hashemim lamed hei. And they brought many olos, many much fat of the shlomim, and many libations for the olah. And the service of God's house became founded again. Wow, what a pasuk! And Chizkiyahu was in the house. People were very pleased and thrilled. Because God made this foundation, kibe pitom hayadavar. The thing happens unexpectedly, suddenly. He wasn't prepared.
I assume these bounties were distributed to the people who attended the
school. Oh, yes, for sure. That's what made them happy. Vayishlach Hizkiyahu al kol Yisrael b'Yehuda v'gam igros kosav al Ephraim v'Menashe lavo beis Hashem b'Yerushalayim lasos pesach l'Hashem Elokei Yisrael. There you have it. So this has to be understood in the context of the previous story. He's not calling them now to do that because it's in the middle of Pesach, right?
Yeah.
This is, you know, before the fact, right?
Mm.
And he sent these letters to Ephraim, to Menashe, all the way up north, to come down to the temple to make the Pesach. You can't make the Pesach just where you are. Everyone has to come down to the temple. Now, you know, there are some people in Israel, the Shomronim, who make their Pesach. To this day, they make it in the Shomron, right?
Uh-huh. Big celebration. The whole traffic was a big mess.
Yeah. So, because the Torah never says where to go. It says the Makom HaShivchar, the place I will choose. So that the Shomronim, they felt that Shomron was their place. The Kutim were up north. They didn't hold to the sanctity of Jerusalem.
They became
Jewish because after the 10 tribes were destroyed, they were brought in to take their place, like the Syrians did. They replaced populations, and they were immediately stricken with lions. Remember, Lyriaritis. The lions came in because the
land was empty.
The land was empty, so wild animals are going to fill in it. Right?
Uh-huh.
There are people moving in. You know, people shouldn't be living near lions. And to tell you the truth, lions don't want to be living near people either. Lions want to be living near gazelles. Right?
And the gazelles are now running around.
And zebras.
There.
Right? So, I mean, there's this famous saying. It says, the gazelle wakes up in the morning and says, if I'm not faster than the fastest lion, I'll be dead. And the lion wakes up in the morning and says, if I'm not faster than the slowest gazelle, I'll be hungry. Right? So, but however you look at it, everyone's running. Right? So, that's actually a metaphor for our daily business. Right? We're all running someplace. To catch a train, have to catch a slow train, a fast train. You know, we're all running to something. Running away from something, running to something. But one thing is clear. Honor is faster than we are. How? If you pursue it,
it runs away from
you. It runs away and won't catch it. If you run away from it,
it runs after you.
It runs after you and will catch you. So honor is faster than us. You see? Okay. Alright, so these Shomronim became converts from the lions, right? And they started to observe Judaism, but they didn't go so well in the end. Right? So they were called Gerei Reis, they're known as the Kutim. Right? That which they kept in the Torah, they kept very, very scrupulously. V'yivatza melech v'sarah v'chol ha'kol v'yushalayim la'sos ha'pesach b'chodesh ha'sheni. Can you contemplate why this is such an important pasuk? I mean, besides the content, it says v'yivatz, he took counsel from amongst. It's a very smart thing for a king to do. Don't make unilateral decisions, even though you can. They'll have to listen to you. But v'yivatz means he took counsel. He's wise, pious, and God fearing. Wise, pious, and God-fearing. Good. That's what they say this is. They decided to keep the Pesach. What a nice time to be learning this. We just celebrated Pesach Sheni. What a coincidence. Of all the chapters that this year should be learning, just the week of Pesach Sheni, we're reading about Pesach. Now, there's two ways to keep Pesach Sheni. First of all, why would we want to?
For the people that missed.
Well, that missed it, right? Okay, but there's something else. There could be, you see, when there's a leap year, right? Already, you know, you're keeping Pesach already in a later time.
Mm-hmm.
So here, why do we have to have leap years?
Because Pesach comes always in the Aviv.
Right, because if we do what the Muslims do and just hold the lunar year after year after year after year, you're going to lose 11 and a quarter days every year, and after some time. You know, Ramadan is in the summer, and then Ramadan is in the winter, and then you know, right? So you're gonna, but you can't have that with our holidays. Our holidays are seasonally based. If you don't have barley growing in Israel on the second day of Pesach, then you can't bring the Minchas Omer, and you're in trouble. If you don't have wheat growing on Shavuos, you won't have the Shtei Alechem. You won't have the things you need for those holidays, right?
You saw all the fields, or they were already harvested.
Yeah, so the harvest of the rate by the time.
When I was going to the airport, they were still all standing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. All
the fields, all along the way.
This is now the wheat harvest is right. Is really coming on, yeah. Right, so I didn't see those. So here's what happens. Usually you can tell pretty much in advance whether barley is going to be growing in time. And if it's a particularly, look, like this year was a very mild winter, and we had a leap year. That's here, I'm saying. But when you see the winter is harsh, and the winter goes into February, March in Israel, and there's snow, I need an extra month before Pesach comes. So you make two others,
mm-hmm.
Right? Now it's all set. It's all set in advance, right? But whether you have a mild winter or not is not going to make its mind up just because of what the calendar says. The calendar used to react to the weather. Now the weather reacts to the calendar because the calendar is set. To have 7 leap years every 19 years, and then it mamish evens its way out. Right? And we can always add a day to Cheshvan or Kislev if we need to. Okay? So what's going on there? The Talmud has a lot to say about this. The Talmud says that Chizkiyahu was entering close to the, you know, the Purim story hadn't happened yet, right? So it's at the end of Adar, and he sees, no, there's no way barley will be ready in 2 weeks. So he wanted to add another Adar. But it was already the end of Adar. He was already getting close to Nisan. So that was the debate, whether when Adar is already over, can you now, you know, before on the 30th day of Adar, which has the potential to be the first of Nisan, can I still add another Adar? And he says, okay, if the whole point is to make Pesach on time, all right, we'll all do Pesach Sheni. Mm-hmm. There are two ways to do this. Either add another Adar and keep Pesach on the 15th of Nisan, or leave it as it is, and we'll make a Pesach Sheni. We'll make the second Pesach. So that's what's going on here. We'll talk about that next week. I just want to also concentrate for the beginning of next week, remind us, Sheila.
I'm not
going to be here.
Oh, you'll be here? Oh, wow. Nice. How long? Nice.
So Vivatz is, the Gemara says, is the word Yoetz. He was an advisor. He took advice. He took counsel well. Why is this important? Because Yeshayahu, when he describes Mashiach, he calls him Pele Yoetz. As Christians say, is a reference to their name. Tumadiga Kaili. But we want to say it's Chizkiyahu. And we'll see how each one of those lines, Pele Yoetz, Aviyah, El Gibor is Chizkiyahu. El Gibor, Chazak Yah. I mean, come on, it's all Chizkiyahu. And he did save us from the Assyrians. Bikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu lasos Chizkiyahu Mashiach.
What happened?
He didn't sing Shira. Okay. All right, everybody, it's great to see you.